Great. Okay. Our internet was out today down here, so I'm on a landline. So hopefully it'll be as clear as before.
Sounds fine.
Good. Good. What we're going to do in a minute is we're going to go through what we do every week. Glow's going to talk about the things that are happening in Washington, and then we're going to have a few announcements, and then we're going to have a little bit of a discussion in terms of setting up a program from start to finish. And for those who have programs, it will be a kind of a refresher and maybe some helpful hints on things that you may want to reconsider. And then for new grantees who are either reading the post-session notes or going to be listening to this call, it might give you some hints on writing a new proposal. So we really like to address both crowds, people who have grants already, and then also people who are thinking of applying for grants. So where are you, Richard, and where are you all in this grant cycle? Are you starting a grant, thinking of proposing a grant?
We're going to propose a grant for in this grant cycle.
Great, great. That's super. Well, then this should be helpful. What we're going to do, we've had several of these cycles about this time. Through the year, we discuss different issues that are pertinent to job development and setting up job training programs. When the grants come out, when the RFPs come out, we shift gears a little bit, and we basically go through all of the activities and all of the things that are important in setting up a job development training program. And it just so happens, and we've been doing this for years since the program got started, EPA has kind of worked, they've worked with us on developing their RFP. So pretty much what we talk about is what they ask for in the grant. So we don't specifically talk about how to write your grant, but all of the issues we address, all the very specific issues from now to when the grant proposals do is pretty much in the grant proposal. So a lot of grantees find it helpful. We got a nice letter this week from one of the participants of the professional learning community who had been on our calls the last cycle and wanted to thank us that they did receive a grant, actually, and that some of the things they picked up in these little 30-minute conference calls were helpful to them. So while we're not basically a crib sheet on filling out the grant application, we do our job is to look at job development programs and how to develop a good, sustainable program. Someone just joined?
Hi, this is Lana Miller from Hunters Point Family.
Okay, Hunters Point Family, great. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
Hunters Point, is we've got someone who has just received a grant the last cycle, as a matter of fact, and we've got some people that are just proposing grants. So they're where you were about a year ago at this time. Is that correct? That's about right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we're just proposing.
Yeah.
You, Hunter's Point is an interesting area, and well, why don't we get started first, and then we'll talk a little bit about that. Glow, do you want to give us a quick rundown of what you know about the issuance of the RFP and what's happening in Washington?
Sure. I just talked to Joe last week, in fact, and he said that although he's hoping that the RFP will still be issued before the holidays, he really thinks that it won't end up going out until early January. He didn't say anything about the deadlines or when anything's going to be due or anything like that, but I'm thinking that it's not going to go out until after January 1st.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And usually it does. I think this is what happened last year.
It is.
Someone just joined?
Okay. Yes, it's Pam Caronchio from the Energy Coordinating Agency.
Okay, great. Pam, do you all have a grant now? Are you involved in a grant? Or are you submitting a grant?
No, we submitted last year. And we got encouragement to keep refining the project that we submitted.
Yes.
So we're excited about doing that, and we're planning to submit again this year.
That was very good advice that someone gave you. Very good advice. Glow just said that the RFP is due. EPA tends to be late rather than sooner, but they don't. It's funny because they don't give any prior notice. All of a sudden, it appears and it's out. And of course, we'll notify everyone as soon as it does come out. And then generally, we have about 90 days to respond to it. So in the professional learning community, we will be going every 2 weeks for these 30-minute calls. We'll take a little break for Christmas. We're going to have a session on the 19th of December, and then probably the next one won't be till the 9th when everyone gets back from Christmas.
Which should be pretty much perfect timing, too, I think, because then that will be the last session of this particular cycle.
That's right.
So when we start a new cycle of PLC, we should be just right around the time that the RFP is released.
That's right. And what we do is we go through it pretty much step by step. And to explain quickly a little bit about HMTRI, we've been working with EPA since the beginning of Brownfields. We've got an extensive history in it. I used to work for EPA. We've worked with all of the grantees through the years. Work closely with them. We work in cooperative agreement with EPA. Our mission is basically to assist communities with their programs. One of the things we help them do is get programs going with technical assistance. And another thing we do is once they're going, we try to keep them going as efficiently as possible and sustainable so that they could continue even if the grant ends and they could continue on a sustainable basis. We've got many grantees who are not receiving federal funding and still running these programs very successfully. So, and we have an annual meeting of all the grantees, which our PLC members are invited to. That occurs in August. And then, of course, we have these calls. We also will be at some meetings, and I'll just this segues back into the next thing we do is general announcements. We know when the RFP is going to be out, probably in very first part of January. Where there are two conferences that you all might want to think about. One is in Washington, and one is in Atlanta, and the one in the Green Jobs Conference is going to be in April. Unfortunately, these will be after the grant is due, but the Green Jobs Conference, it's a Good Jobs, Green Jobs Conference, and it's in April 16th to 18th. And everything we talk about in these PLCs, we put in notes so people can pick up the notes if they weren't able to attend and get a gist of what we talked about. We'll put the announcements and the linkages to these places in the notes. The other one is Brownfields, which is a very important meeting. It's held every 18 months, May 15th through the 17th this year in Atlanta. There's about 4,000 to 5,000 people attend. Everyone who's involved in any way with Brownfields comes to this meeting. The insurance companies, the remediation and the techies and the community people and the job development people, they're all there. So it's a great conference. We're going to be presenting perhaps at both of them. We have a booth at Brownfields, and we'll have a workshop session, especially for anyone interested in job development, also at the Brownfields meeting. So those are two dates that you may want to earmark. And then, in fact, we'll put the notes on. You may want to get your hotel reservations early. The Brownfields meeting, they're charging $50. It used to be free, $50 this year. And they have hotel reservations. Most of the hotels are about $150 a night in Atlanta. And the reason I would say is book early is the close hotels book up fast because a lot more people attend these than you think. And if you wait too long, you'll find that the rooms are filled. So I would, when you get the notes, you can go to that link and you might want to make those reservations. You could always cancel them later. But now, in terms of registration for the conference, you could register any time. But the housing would be the thing I think you may want to check into. The other thing that we're going to put in the notes are some other opportunities, funding opportunities you may want to look into. Probably the thing that's on the burner right now is some environmental justice small grants. These are small grants that are given out. They're due, the proposals for them are due on January 7th. There's going to be there's one more teleconference set for December 13th, and we'll put information on that. The environmental justice small grants are small. They're $25,000 grants. They're for environmental justice projects. But you might want to look at that, and there might be an angle that your community might play in terms of job development and community involvement in the environmental justice arena. And if you were to submit a proposal, it might be a nice segue into the job training program. So it's something that you may want to just look at to see if it's something you may want to participate in. We mentioned last time also the Greatest Institute. Do either of you know if that's filled up?
Last I heard, there were still a few openings.
Okay. We did put in the notes, and we'll put in the notes again. If you have any trainers who are OSHA trainers, people who provide general construction training or general industry training, this OSHA training, they may want to attend this great
Nicole Oretzky.
Okay. And where are you from?
Savannah State University.
Oh, great. Great. Okay. And do you have a grant now, or are you thinking of submitting a grant?
We will be submitting an application for this round.
Great. Okay. Okay. Great. We have several people who are submitting, and we have someone who has been very successful in submitting. So in a minute, we're going to put her on the spot and talk to us. These are informal calls. We like to discuss some of the issues involved in job development and setting up job training programs. A lot of these things we'll put in the notes. One of the things I wanted to discuss today is what you should probably be doing now. And you have about 90 days once they issue the RFP. And one thing that people aren't aware of is the EPA, federal employees, can work with communities, and they can work with you on a personal basis until the RFP comes out. Once the RFP comes out, they really can't talk to you specifically about your program. They can talk in terms of generalities. They can answer questions about the RFP, but they can't give you any personal attention. So what I'm suggesting to those of you who don't have a grant is you may want to contact your regional rep. Even if you may or may not, or you haven't made a final decision to submit, and I will include all the contact information in our notes to everyone. And I assume I have everyone's email address for our PLC list. If I don't, if anyone's listening to this call and they want to make sure they get the notes and the invites to each PLC, which is every 2 weeks, have them just send our contact information to msenew, that's msenew, at AOL.com, and we'll make sure you're on our list for both our PLC announcements and the notes. And did someone just join?
Yes, hi, it's Judith Underwood from Cape Cod Community College.
Oh, great, okay.
Sorry for the delay.
That's fine. And that's a grantee, right? You have a grant at Cape Cod?
No.
Oh, you don't? Okay, okay.
We are exploring
getting
one. We've had one in the past, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that, for those of you who don't have a grant, it's very important that you contact the regional rep, the regional manpower rep. It's an EPA rep, and we'll put their names and contact information. And just call them up and tell them that you were at the professional learning community call and that I suggested that we contact you, and that you may say, well, we're exploring it. We're not sure if we're going to do it, but I want to touch base with you. And this is really important because before the RFP comes out, which is now in probably in the next month, 3 or 4 weeks, they can talk to you. And your best friend, believe it or not, these EPA people, they're great people, but they're on your side because they have this little rivalry among themselves. Each region, each of the 10 regions, has a job development representative, and that rep is kind of oversees the job training programs in that community. And they kind of take pride in each other's programs. And if those who, in fact, at our last meeting, which region was that, Glo? They ended up doing cheers, and there were so many of them. They were so well bonded. I think
I think that was four, wasn't it?
Four might have been.
Oh no
four.
No! It was Region Six. Sorry.
Six. Okay. Region
yep.
Region Six. They were so well in communications, and the regional rep was so proud of them that they were just regular rabble rousers. We sit them all at the same desk, but. What I'm trying to express is that that regional rep is really your friend, and it's in their best interest for you to get the grant. So they'll help you, hopefully, as much as they can. And so you need to contact them, even if you don't submit or decide you're not going to submit after we go through all these calls. You may find you don't want to do this. One of the things we like to do is some people find out that they don't want to do this after they see what's involved. But it's something to do and to do right away because, as I say, once the RFP comes out, their personality will change a little bit and they won't be able to help you as much.
Mm-hmm.
During the next couple calls, we're going to be talking about those things that you need to be doing early because they take time. There's certain things that take more time than others. Writing the grant proposal, you could sit down and pound that out in a couple of weeks, but there are some problems and issues that take a long time, and those have to do with your community assessment, really getting to know your community, getting to know who is operating in your neighborhood, getting to know who else is around that you can partner with, setting up your partnerships so that you've got the right partners. And these are things that when you send these things out and you start contacting people, you'll find that it takes time to do that. And if you wait till February, you're not going to be able to get the response back that it takes to really have an impressive proposal. So next time on December 19th, we're going to go in more depth about these things you're going to want to do early and do them as soon as possible. But the number one thing is contact your regional rep. In terms of choosing your partners, you're going to be wanting to do this, but you may want to do a really good, solid assessment first. And we're going to be talking about how to do that. But while we have her on the line today, I'd like to, Hunter's point, to talk a little bit about her story because it's such a great story. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what happens? And let me give you a segue into Hunter's point. This was a community that was a wonderful community back around the turn of the century. We're going way back. And during the First World War, this is in San Francisco, on the bay. It was a very strategic location. During the wars, both wars, they turned it into a military base, a huge military base. They made ships. They made a tremendous number of warships in the area. The Gomar Explorer that Howard Hughes secretly made was involved there. It's a huge complex. But with any military-industrial complex, it brought all of the negatives that one might think in terms of environmental pollution, hazardous materials, and Superfund sites. And unfortunately, what happened is things started the base closure situation. They decided to close this base. Well, over the years, what happened, and you can correct me if I don't have this exactly right, but, you know, we brought people in to work at these bases, and then all of a sudden the economy collapses. And then combined with that, the city started to isolate this neighborhood. They actually built a highway to divide this neighborhood from the rest of San Francisco. And pretty soon we find a community which is isolated, and pretty soon all of the nasty things that a city like San Francisco would need, they pushed into this community. And then, of course, the unemployment rate went up. And in addition, at the time when there was redlining in communities, people were put into these communities, and the community became less diverse. So you ended up with a community that was left with this beautiful piece of land, tremendously degraded by the government, but deserted by the government, and in economic chaos. And with the people, tremendous, wonderful, hardworking people in this community that were really isolated, and with no jobs and a lot of pollution. And then all of a sudden, people start looking around and saying, this is the last piece of beautiful real estate in San Francisco Bay Area. It's beautiful country, overlooks the bay. So all of a sudden now you've got the bankers and the developers coming in and thinking, we're going to help you. We're going to turn this into beautiful land, and of course we're going to build very luxurious communities at the same time. But the question is, are we going to gentrify you? Are you going to participate in the redevelopment of this community, or are we just going to end up pushing you out? So here we have a community that was victimized two or three times, and here we sit today and has the possibility of being victimized again by being pushed out. And the people that are going to get rich are people from outside the community that did not live there during the bad times but want to move in during the good times. And did I kind of describe this correct, or am I way off base in my description of Hunter's Point?
No, you've actually hit it on the nail. It's funny to hear somebody else say it, because I feel like whenever I say it, I'm like some kind of crazy radical. It's like one of those things that nobody wants to, you know, it's very obvious, but nobody wants to acknowledge it. You know, instead, people kind of act like everything that's going on in the community is the result of some type of insanity, you know, or dysfunction of the people themselves. And so that's usually when people talk about the community, that's in the context that they talk about it. No one ever talks about it, you know, in the way that you just described, which is, you know,
you've been working on this grant for quite a while, haven't you? Now, you were originally your community group, correct?
Absolutely, yes. Community-based organization, the Hunter's Point family. So we're grassroots. I was born and raised in Hunter's Point, and so we're about 90% of our staff.
And they could go to your website and read all about your history and about the good things you're doing. Now, why did you decide to get into environmental job training then?
Well, because as you described, all over the country, we're in an economic recession, but in San Francisco, in Bayview, Hunter's Point, I mean, we're going through a time of, you know, unprecedented economic growth. We have some of the largest development projects going on in the history of San Francisco on the municipal side, on the developer side. But what's happening is that nobody from the community is really participating in any of these opportunities in any meaningful ways. Maybe at the most, you know, getting jobs as labor, holding stop signs, but people aren't being prepared for the job. They're not, even those who are already in the union as laborers or electricians or whatever are having a really hard time getting work. And as a matter of fact, you know, as part of participating in this program, you know, I've become friends with the folks from Oakland and Richmond, and they said they both acknowledge that they have a better, easier time getting work out of our projects than we do. So, I mean, this was really an attempt to say, you know, our people need to work, and if they're not going to work, then there's really no service you can provide to change the course of their life outcomes, because when people have to put food on the table, you know, they just get involved in the underground economy, which is, you know, leads to two places. So that's really why we decided it was so important.
You had to find partners that you could partner with to make this thing work, right?
Well, we partnered. What I tried to do initially was to partner with all the workforce development agencies that were in Bayview Hunters Point. One that we had an existing relationship with is our oldest one, which is Young Community Developers, and there was another one. The relationship with Young Community Developers, that continues to be very good and very smooth and very positive, and I believe it's because, you know, I have a good relationship with the leadership. But there was another one that kind of during, at the last day the proposal was due, all of a sudden try to, you know, hold out for more money and do all, I mean, just crazy stuff. And I just mentioned that to say, you know, stuff happens. It's not always, you know, really smooth. But really what they wanted to do was apply for it themselves after I had already given them the proposal. It was interesting. But so we partnered with the other workforce development agency in Bayview Hunters Point, and the purpose for that was to make sure that we didn't create unnecessary competition, because that's how the community has really been kind of eroded over the years, and to, you know, to make sure that we had folks working together and to really kind of beef up the workforce development aspect in Bayview Hunters Point in general. We also partnered with several of the developers and the city folks, like the PUC, who have ongoing projects in Bayview Hunters Point, and talked to them about training, talked to them about hiring, and all of those kinds of things. And also the Office of Economic and Workforce Development. And we had relationships with most of the city people, and it's kind of in their interest right now, because all these projects are in Bayview Hunters Point, they have to have community partnerships. So it wasn't a hard sell at all. It was actually pretty smooth. The developers, too, you know, they didn't really have any problem with, you know, giving us letters saying that they would hire, and we just assured them that whoever we would send them, you know, would be ready to work, they'd be drug tested, that we would provide ongoing case management, so if any issues arose on the job site, that we could, you know, come in and deal with it, because of, you know, the dirty little secret is a lot of the employers don't even want to deal, you know, with folks from the community. They don't, you know, there's cultural differences. They don't want the headache. There's a lot of biases that come up. So by saying that we'll step in if you have any issues, it kind of relieves them of all that and makes it a little easier. So
the beauty is that you develop this from the inside out, and there may be people that will listen to this who may have to go the other way from the outside in, where they may have to identify community groups like yours who have it together but maybe need some outside assistance to make it work. And so, but what Lena has done here is all of the right things. She got her partnerships together. She's got her employers together. She did her homework. But they had this existing organization going. There may be other people who listen to this call who said, yeah, but we don't, there are Hunters Points. The nice thing about Hunters Points, there are Hunters Points all over this country, but
right.
Hunters Point is an exaggeration, you're an exaggeration, or you're a super example of all these smaller, they don't happen to the extent it happened in Hunters Point, but they're out there.
Right. Well, I think it's, you know, it's the history of this country, which is kind of, you know, get the land and whatever happens to the inhabitants along the way is just kind of, you know, what are they, collateral damage. And so, you know, that's what happened to this community. I mean, people were needed to, for labor for the shipyards, and then they closed down the shipyards. And like you said, now everyone is looking at the property. They have actually plans drawn up to make this a yacht harbor and stuff. And, you know, basically what they're saying, you know, it's primarily, it has been historically a primarily African-American population. So it's like, you know, let's move everybody out and, you know, make this a community that is, you know, more comfortable for other folks. And, you know, the mayor has even expressed that when they have a lot of, not propaganda, but, you know, a lot of studies and stuff called the Out-Migration Report that talks about the declining African-American population, which dropped in half from about 8% to 4% within 10 years. And the mayor recently said, when someone tried to bring it up to him about, you know, kind of decreasing the flow of out-migration, well, I'm not worried about the people who are leaving. I'm trying to attract, you know, new people. So in other words, folks, money, because that's who can afford to live in San Francisco. So there's not, you know, even from the city, it's pretty blatant that there's not a lot of investment in the population that has basically been the sponge for all of this, you know, and absorbed all the pollution because of the shipyards, the two Superfund sites, 120 brownfield sites, the sewer, the dump, and the power plant for San Francisco. So you can imagine we have also the health and social economic statistics, you know, some of the highest in the country or the worst in the country around health and cancer and all of those kinds of things. So, you know, it's definitely, it's an interesting situation, but I think that, you know, I kind of look at us as the phoenix. If we can figure it out here, we can kind of figure it out anywhere. You
That's
know,
right.
Anyone can do it.
That's right, and small hunters points exist in Bridgeport, they exist in Brooklyn, they exist in Detroit, and it's the job of those who are thinking of one of these programs, if you're not in the community, to look and do an assessment to find someone like a hunters point family that you might be able to approach and suggest you're interested in doing this with them. And would they be interested in partnering with you? And that's, if you're not, if you can't go from the inside out, you go from the outside in and try to join a genuine partnership so that those new grantees, and next time we're going to talk about this whole idea of assessing your community to decide, where do you want to do this? Obviously, you know, in San Francisco, they've got two other programs. They've got one in Richmond and one up in Oakland. But this is a community that really needs it. So it would make no sense to put one of these programs in San Francisco, but it makes tremendous sense to put it in Hunters Point. Same thing in Bridgeport. And so this whole idea of assessing and finding out where you want to put this program is extremely important, but the most important part, even more important than finding out where you'll put it, is finding a group like Hunters Point Family that you can work with one-on-one so that you can have a true partnership and work with them. If you can't do that, then you really don't need to go too much further because it's got to be a genuine partnership with the community. And it sounds like Lena is on her way to doing this. So she's done the easy part. Now comes the hard part, Lena, right?
Absolutely. Well, we're planning on it and stuff now, but the good thing is we're very motivated. You know, we have a lot to prove, you know,
good.
So we're working very hard to make this a success.
Well, I think you're one of the show points of the country. We, unfortunately, we do one of our promises, we keep these calls down to 30 minutes so that it doesn't take a large portion of everyone's day, and it's just a call to get you going. We're going to meet again on the 19th. I'm going to send out these notes. Lena's okay if anyone wants to contact you, if I put your contact information in the notes, is that okay?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Grantees are tremendous mentors. They really like to help people. So if anyone wants to call or email Lena, I'll have her contact information, and she could give you some great ideas. So while I hate to cut everyone off, it's a great discussion. Let's continue on the 19th of December, and we'll go from there.
Appreciate that you organized this. This is really very, really very helpful.
Great. Well, hopefully people will get good programs going, and we'll move on from there. Great. Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you,
everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 Bye.